A morning today in Shabbos, Daf Tzadi Ches. We're on the bottom of Tzadi Zayin Amud Beis. We're in the 11th parak of Masechet Shabbos. We're learning about the Malacha of Hotza'ah. The Mishnah opens up with giving us the basics regarding Hotza'ah, throwing from Rishus Yachid to Rishus Rabim, which is identified as Hotza'ah, going from Rishus Rabim to Rishus Yachid, which is Hachnasa. Hotza'ah is an Av, Hachnasa is a Tolada. Other Toladas that we learned about is Ma'avir Dal Amos Rishus Rabim, sending something. Either walking something through in a Rishus Rabim for Amos or throwing something in a Rishus Rabim for Amos. So these are the basics regarding the Malacha of Hotza'ah. On the Malacha of throwing something in a Rishus Rabim, so we are looking at the Gemara right now, we'll just pick it right up. Pshita, the Gemara says, the following becomes obvious. Let's say that your Kavod is that you're going to throw 8 Amos in a Rishus Rabim and you end up throwing 4 Amos. So the Gemara says it's analogous to the following. Let's say your intention is to write the name Shimon. Now, obviously, writing the name Shimon on Shabbos would be a violation of Shabbos. Kosev, writing, is one of the malachos. So when you sit down and you write a word, so one is violating Shabbos. The word has to have a minimum of 2 letters. The Mishnah already told us that kosev shtei osios. You have to be writing 2 letters. But your intention was to write the name Shimon, and instead you write the word Shame. You just write the first 2 letters of the name. Even though your intention was to write Shimon, and nevertheless you wrote Shame, you violated Shabbos, because you wrote 2 letters, and Shame is in fact a name. Perhaps you're confused over the fact that the word Shame has a Mem Sofis, and the word Shimon does not have a Mem Sofis. So the Gemara later on is going to be discussing that. Later on, I don't mean today, but later on when we do the Malacha of Kosev, in Shabbos, in Masechta Shabbos, so the Gemara is going to be asking that question. But right now, the Gemara's assumption is that, of course, the person's going to be chayiv. So what do you see? You had intention to do a longer malacha. You do a shorter version of the malacha. But what you do has the requisite shear, so you're going to be chayiv. So the Gemara's assumption now is that the same thing is true when your intention is to throw 8 amos, and instead you threw only 4 amos. It is a shorter version of that which you intended, but it is the requisite shear. And therefore, you're going to be chayiv. That the Gemara says, that's pasha. Let's say your intention was only to throw 4 amos, and you ended up throwing 8 amos. Mahu? What would be the halacha? Now, on one hand, the one way to look at it is that, look, lamaiso, you threw it. And you threw it the requisite amount. Not the amount that you intended, but you threw it. On the other hand, that wasn't your kavanah. As we've said time and again, part of the very definition of a malacha, it has to be intentional. Over here, you haven't matched your intentionality. Your intention was to throw it 4 amos. Instead, it went 8 amos. That wasn't your intention. And so, therefore, the argument could be over here that you're not going to be chayv because it doesn't. Your action and your intentions don't match. So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to go back to yesterday's discussion. As part of yesterday's discussion, the Gemara says that we can create a scenario in which you, in part of your intention, you were happy with wherever it landed. So although you said that you are planning on throwing it 8 amos, and it only went 4 amos, other way around, you intend on throwing 4 amos and it landed 8 amos, but as part of your kavanah, you stipulated, and I guess you verbalized it, you stipulated and you said, I'm kind of happy with wherever it lands under the circumstances, so then one would be chayiv. Now the Gemara says, let's go back to the first point, which the Gemara thought is obvious, and now the Gemara says, I don't think it's so obvious. What we're doing is we're making the comparison between writing the name Shame and, intending to write the word Shimon, writing the word Shame, and the Gemara says that's analogous to intentionally and intending on throwing it 8 amos, and it only went 4 amos. The Gemara says it's really not comparable. Because hasam kamad lo kasuv shame lo michtiv le shimon. Hacha kamad lo zarek arba lo mizderek le tameh. The Gemara says, look, when it comes to writing the word shame, well, let's start off with your intention. Your intention was to write Shimon. By definition, Shimon insists that you have to write the letter shin and the letter mem. There's no other way around it. So we can say that shame is incorporated in Shimon, because the steps to get to Shimon is that you have to write the letter Shin Mem. So the Gemara says, so there, I can understand how you're going to be chayiv. But in the case over here where your intention was to throw it in Amos, and instead you only threw it four Amos, the Gemara says you don't have to throw four Amos in order to get to eight Amos. Now, but the Gemara's point probably is as follows, that it's true, obviously, that in order to get to eight Amos, it's going to pass over the four Amos point. However, it doesn't have to stop at the four Amos point. Meaning what you could do, and your intention was to throw it eight Amos directly. You wanted the item to go over the air for the entirety of the eight Amos. It doesn't have to stop at the four Amos point in order to get eight Amos. So that by, on the other hand, that's not true when it comes to Shimon. Meaning by Shimon, every letter is a step along the way. And by definition, you have to write the letter Shin Mem in order to write the word Shimon. So the Gemara says, so the cases are not really comparable, and the Gemara says, even though the Gemara opened up with Pshita, it's obvious, the Gemara just simply scales that back a little bit, it's not so obvious. Tan Rabban, the Gemara now continues its discussion, Azorek, Mirshus Rabban, Mirshus Rabban, Mirshus Yachid Bemsa. We're going back to scenarios that we discussed yesterday, but where the Gemara now is going to make a new point. And that is that if I throw from a Mirshus Rabban to another Mirshus Rabban, and in the middle there's a Mirshus Yachid, Dalet Amos Chayev. If you threw a totality of four Amos, you're going to be Chayev. Pater, Pachos, may Arba Amos Pater. But if you threw less than four Amos, you're going to be Pater. Now, the way Rashi sets up the case is as follows. Here's what you did. You started at one Rishus Rabbim, and you threw. And here, it only traversed two Amos of the first Rishus Rabbim. Then it went through a Rishus Yachid. Now, the Rishus HaYachid we're just going to ignore. And in a moment, we're going to explain why we're going to ignore it. But we're going to ignore the Rishus HaYachid. Then it went through the second Rishus Rabbim that was on the other side of the house. And there, it traversed another two Amos. And now what we're saying is a tremendous Chiddush. What we're going to be able to do now is that we're going to be able to take two Amos of the first Rishus Rabbim. We're going to take the two Amos of the second Rishus Rabbim. And we're going to be Mitztaref. And we're going to combine those two in order to get to a totality of four Amos. Now that is in fact a tremendous Chiddush, because one could have easily argued that the house in the middle serves as like a chatzitza. It separates the two Rishus HaRabim. And as a result of that, you're not going to be able to take a look at the two, add that to the other two. Then you shouldn't say that it's Mitztaref, and one does not have the liability of being Mavir Dal Amos Rishus HaRabim. And here, in this brisa, what we are clearly going to do is that we're going to totally disregard the house in the middle, and we're going to just simply say that in totality, the item traveled four Amos in a Rishus Rabbim. My Kamash Malan, the Gemara is going to make exactly this point. Ha Kamash Malan, Rishuyos Mitzarfos. That the Rishu, the two Rishus Rabbim are going to in fact combine. Udelo Armin includes a Kamishuncha, and we don't say that while it spent time in the house, so it was like it was munach in the house. It was like it rested in the house. An idea which we spent a good part of yesterday discussing. This principle of kluta kamisha uncha. So the Gemara is saying now that we're not going to say that in this case over here. And if we did say that, so then what would have happened was is that the item started in the Rishus HaRabim, rested in the house, then picked itself up halachically in the house, went into the Rishus HaRabim. That's what we would have said had we employed the principle of kluta. Because we don't say Kluta Kamisha Uncha, as a result of that, so what it's going to now do is that it's going to go from one Rishus HaRabim to the other Rishus HaRabim. We get to now ignore the house. Once we ignore the house, so then we can take the two plus the two, add them together in order to get to a total of four Amos, traveling four Amos in a Rishus HaRabim. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Amar Rav Ava, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav. We're going to now make a halachic statement in the name of Rav. Let's see it first. Because this is really going to be taking us through the remainder of today's daf. And that is, HaMa'avir Dala Amos B'Rishus Rabbim B'Kura Pater. Let's say a person were to carry four Amos in a Rishus Rabbim, but that happens to be the Rishus Rabbim has a roof over its head. One is going to be exempt L'fi She'eno Domo L'Digle Midbar. Because this is not the way that the Rishus Rabbim was defined in the Midbar. And so therefore the definition of Rishus Rabbim is only that which is going to be in the Midbar. Since in the Midbar there were no roofs over the Rishus HaRabim, as a result of that, the very definition of Rishus HaRabim is that it has to be in an open area with no roof overhead, and any time that it does have any kind of roofing on the top of it, by definition it's not a Rishus HaRabim, and so therefore one is not going to be violating Shabbos if one were to carry in a roofed area in a domed Rishus HaRabim. Okay, That's the statement of Rav. And now, for the remainder of today, here's what we're going to do. The Gemara says that it is because it is unprecedented that you have a roofed Rishus HaRabim, so therefore, anytime the Rishus HaRabim has any kind of roof, one is not going to be chav. And the reason why is because in the Midbar, which serves as the defining moments of a Rishus HaRabim and a Rishus HaYachid, so you didn't have this kind of construct. And now what the Gemara is going to do for the remainder of today's daf is that we're going to take ourselves back into the Midbar. We're going to take a look at the Rishus HaRabim. We're going to take a look at the Rishus HaYachid that was there in the Midbar. And we're going to see whether or not this is in fact true or this is in fact not true. Now, over here, we're going to be extraordinarily specific today. We're going to take a look at the Midbar. We're going to be taking a look at the agalos, the wagons that were used to transport the krushim, the beams. And based on the way that the beams were loaded on the wagons and based on the configuration, so we're going to see whether or not the statement of Rav is supportable. Ultimately, we're going to support the statement of Rav, and ultimately we're going to be learning together that Rav's statement over here is not only correct, it's totally supportable, but in doing so, we're going to go through a lot of specifics. If you have pictures, and I'm sure the art school has wonderful pictures, if you have pictures, I have my own series of pictures. It would be extraordinarily helpful to get you through the daf. I'm going to be assuming right now that you have some sort of pictorial aid in terms of helping you. Obviously, I'm going to try to describe what we're looking at over here. But if you're looking at some series of wagons and the beams, so then all this becomes a lot easier because here really it's all visual, and so the pictures would be extraordinarily helpful. Let's begin. Ini, the Gemara says, it is true. The Hanagalos de Mekurus Havyan. So the Gemara says, now we know the wagons had a roof over the top of it. Now, the wagons are that which transported the krushim. As they were going through the Mishkan, so the Mishkan becomes assembled and unassembled every time they moved, obviously. They unassembled the Mishkan. Then they loaded the beams, which were the heaviest components of the Mishkan. They loaded the beams up on wagons. There are a total of 48 beams, each one of the four wagons is going to be carrying 12 of those 48 beams. And so the wagons, when loaded with the beams, are considered like they have a roof over the head. And right now the assumption of the Gemara is as follows, and this is going to be the correct assumption. The Gemara a little bit later on is going to balk at this assumption, but the Gemara is right now assuming that the wagons themselves were basically just frames. The wagons were a very simple structure. They were basically a frame for, they were. It was four beams, if you will, framing the wagon. Obviously, part of that frame are the two axles that provide the that are going to serve as the axles for the wheels, so that the wagons can roll. But basically, it was a wooden frame. The dimensions of the agalos were 5x5, 5 amos by 5 amos. I'll go over the specifics of the dimensions in just a moment. And when you put the beams over the wagons, so the beams were placed over the wagons where the long side of the beam was placed against the short side of the wagons. And so when the beams are over the wagons, so the beams now create a roof situation. Now, Amar Rav Mishum Rabbi Chia, the following was taught by Rav in the name Rabbi Chia, Galos Tachtem Uvenayim Vetzideim Rishus HaRabim. Now, in terms of the areas that are both surrounding and underneath the wagon, any area that is Tachtem underneath the wagon, Beinehem, Beinehem is between the wagons. Now, the way that the wagons rolled is that the wagons rolled 2x2. There were 4 in total, and they rode 2x2. Now, the wagons themselves were 5 amos long, and I said 5 amos wide. That's true, but the truth of the matter is that they were really 2.5 amos wide. We say that the width of the wagons is a total of 5 amos, but that's only because that's also incorporating the wheels as well. So the wagons really were 5 amos by 2.5 amos. And what happens was that the long side of the beams were placed against the short side of the wagons, and the wagons rolled side by side. When you loaded the beams on the wagons, the beams themselves were 10 amos long, and the wagons were such where there was basically a little space between the two beams as the beams were loaded up on the wagons. So in other words, if you can imagine, if you are now centered between the two wagons, you're basically going to catch a little bit of airspace between the two beams. So now, what the Gemara says is that, and as the Gemara is saying this, as Rav is saying in the name of Rabbi Chiya, that when the wagons are loaded, so the wagons themselves are the Rishos HaYachid, but Tachtehem underneath, Ubeinehem, and between them, meaning between the beams, and Bitsidehem, and the sides of the wagons. The Gemara over here is describing the area between the wheels, so those areas are going to be a Rishos HaRabim. Now, all this becomes difficult because what we just got done saying is that according to Rav, once you're underneath the roof, so then it's not a Rishos HaRabim. Now, the assumption that we have over here is that the wagons are built on a frame, but in the very least, there's going to be 10 tefachim airspace between the floor, the ground, and that first beam that goes up onto the wagon. And so what you have over here is you do have a Rishos HaRabim airspace underneath. And what we think the Gemara is saying right now is that even though you're situated underneath the beams, right, you're right next to the wagon, but you're underneath the beam, the Gemara now is describing this as a Rishos HaRabim. This obviously runs against the Shita of Rav, because Rav taught us that once you have Rishos HaRabim Mikureh, once it has any kind of roofing structure over the top, it by definition is not going to be a Rishos HaRabim. If we're assuming now, which we are, that you're underneath the beams and that qualifies as a Rishos HaRabim, that now seems to go against the premise of Rav. So the Gemara says, Ki kama Rav bidarasa. So the Gemara says, Rav says, look, if you're directly under the beam, you're not going to be in Rishos HaRabim. It means to say that you are going to be underneath any one of the air spaces. Meaning we are assuming, and we'll spend a lot of time discussing this right now. We're assuming right now that the beams are not going to be covering the totality of the wagon. There is going to be some air spaces that where if you look up, you're going to see right up to the sky. And the only thing that Rav meant is that the Tachtehem and the Tzidehem and the Beinehem, they're all going to have the Rishos HaRabim. If there is no obstruction, if nothing is above you, then and only then are you going to be in the Rishos HaRabim. Anytime you're directly underneath the beam, so then you're not going to be in the Rishos HaRabim. And now we get to the details. So now what the Gemara is going to try to figure out is how exactly were the beams loaded up on the wagons so that there isn't going to there's going to be beams, but there's also going to be airspace as well. And so let's get our bearings as we're going to go through the specifics. We have 12 beams going on each one of the wagons, and how exactly were the beams put on the wagon? So in terms of the length of the beams, so they're 10 amos, but that really doesn't interest us. I mean, obviously it does, but in terms of coverage of the wagons, we really want to look at the width of the beams. Now the width of the beams. So you have two choices, because the beams were not a perfect square in terms of its width. It was 1 amah by 1.5 amahs. So in terms of laying them down on the wagon, on the agala, so either it's going to take up an amah or it's going to take up 1.5 amahs. Now in terms of stacking, okay, I'm just going to make a practical point right now. In terms of stacking, it probably sounds a lot easier if they're stacked along the wider side. Right, if you just asked me how to stack them, right, without any other information, I would say stack it where it's 1.5 on the ground, and so therefore you'll have more surface area and it'll be more stable and sturdy. Okay, but notwithstanding, right now we're just talking about stacking them now. The Gemara says Mechti, Orcha de Agala Kama Have Chamesh Amin. So in terms of the length of the Amah, so it's 5 amahs. The length of the wagon, sorry. The length of the wagon is 5 amahs. Pusya dekarish kamahavya amsel paga. Now, in terms of the width of the beam, it's 1.5. Now, as I already pointed out, it could be 1.5, could also be 1. But right now, the Gemara is assuming that we're going to be laying it down on the longer side, on 1.5. Now, kama mosif talsa. Now, how many are you going to put down? Now, remember, we have a total of 12. And right now, we're assuming that we're laying it down along the 1.5 side. So that means to say that it's going to be 1.5 and another 1.5 and another 1.5 amas along the long 5 amas of the wagon. So pashalu paga da amsa. Now, assuming that we are spacing them out and giving them equal spacing, so now, again, if you had a picture right now, it's so much easier to see. But we have now 3 columns of 4 of the beams each one of them taking up now of the five amos of the wagon, 1.5. That's 1.5 times 3. So that gets us to 4.5. Now 4.5, how much does that leave over? It leaves over but a half of an amma. So the Gemara says at that point in time, Kisha dilei mar beni beni kelav adami. So now if you're going to be taking a look at how much is remaining in terms of the airspace between the two columns, between really the three columns, the two airspaces between the three columns. So again, the total amount of beams is 4.5. That leaves a half an amma. A half an amma is 3 tfachim. A half an amma is 3 tfachim. That only gives you 1.5 tfachim between the three columns. Now, 1.5 tfachim, we learned yesterday the principle of lavud. The principle of lavud tells us that any time I have an area that's under 3 tfachim, halacha views it as if it's closed up. What does that now mean? It means that the total area under the beams and even in between is considered closed. So at this point in time, halachically, we have no airspace. So the Gemara says, okay, so now let's try to make an adjustment. So the Gemara says, so let's try now stacking them, not along the wide side, but along the narrow side of the beam. So we're stacking them now on the one amma side. So the Gemara says, okay, so sumcha dekeresh kamahava amta. Kamahava mosiv arba. Pashale amta. The Gemara says it really doesn't help us. Because now what we've done is that we've stacked the 12 beams, but we stacked them on the one amma side. Fine. But how many stacks can you make? The Gemara is still going to be assuming that we're stacking the four rows, we're going to be stacking three in every column. So if we're stacking three in every column, so that's fine. That means to say that the beams themselves take up one amma. We have now four stacks. One amma, one amma, one amma. That obviously is a total of four ammos. How much does that leave us in terms of airspace? It leaves us now an amma of airspace, but an amma of airspace distributed three times over. An amma six tfachim. You take the six tfachim, you divide by three. That's two tfachim airspace between each one of the columns. That's still lavud. Lavud is anything less than three tfachim. We haven't gained by taking it on the narrower side because we still have the lavud principle between each one of the columns, and that is going to now tell us that halachically it's all covered. And now that it's all covered, so once again we're back to square one, because Rav says that any time that you're in any one of the open spaces, you're going to be in a rishus harabim. There are no open spaces that are unroofed, and so therefore we are stuck. So the Gemara says, "Hanich laman damar krashim milamata movyam ama milamalan kalin vochin ad keetz b'shapir." Now the Gemara says, "Now we're going to see this much more in the Amud Beis." But the Gemara says, "Well, how were the krashim shaped? The way you probably have them envisioned is that there are these long rectangular beams. So that is a shita that we're going to see in today's Amud Beis. However, there is another shita that the Gemara is introducing us to right now." And that is, and the formal introduction is coming on the Amud Beis, and that is that the beams themselves are not rectangular, but they are tapered. Meaning on the base of the beam, it's 1 amma by 1.5 ammas, and as the beams now extend upward, so they are tapered all the way till they come to a point. The Gemara describes it not as a point, but as an etzba, as an inch on the top. Fine. And basically what you're looking at is a really long triangle. So the Gemara says, now, if you're stacking these beams on the agala, so the Gemara says, now it makes sense. Now everything really works out. Because now that they're no longer rectangular, and now that they're tapered, so on the wide side, so you're right, there is not going to be any kind of airspace. And even the small amount of airspace that exists on the base of the beams, so that's going to be two tzfachim within one another, and we have the principle of lavud. But once I get to the tapered end, so at the tapered end, so all you really have now are just simply the points of the beam. And so there's going to be a lot of airspace. So much so that now if you're in that airspace area, then you're going to be in a rishus harabim. That works out great. But that's only if the beams are tapered. El alamanda, amir kishem shem alamata mavyam ama kach milamala ovyam ama ma'ik alamemar. But the Gemara says, but if you assume that the beams were rectangular from the bottom all the way to the top, so we're back and we're stuck. And the Gemara says, under those circumstances, what are you going to say? So I'm Rav Kahana be'atbei. So Rav Kahana says that the assumption over here is that when the beams were stuck on, when the beams were loaded onto the wagon, they were not evenly distributed. The Gemara at this point in time now is assuming that the distribution of the beams were not where there was an even distribution of airspace between the beams, but rather the beams were placed on the wagons where you had two columns that were flush against one another. Then you had a significant airspace. Right now, let's assume that we're loading them on the one amma side. So you're taking now two columns, a totality of two ammas. Those two columns are flush against each other all the way to the extreme end of one of the wagons. Then you're going to be doing the same thing with the other two columns, flushing them against the other side. Under those circumstances, now what you have is a significant airspace in the middle. How big? Well, the answer is very simple. A one amma airspace in the middle. Now, why is the Gemara assuming that? So the Gemara just gives us a word in describing it is at be'e. What does that mean? So Rashi over here quotes his Rebbein. Now, Rashi, you can see on the bottom of the Gemara over here is lengthy. And Rashi on the Amud Beis also starts off being lengthy as well, because Rashi quotes his Rebbein. Rashi himself doesn't like the pshat of his Rebbein. Rashi offers his own pshat. The interesting part is, I'm not going to go through the totality of the Rashi and his debate with his Rebbein, but it's interesting because when all said and done, it comes out to the same configuration. The configuration does not change, neither in Rashi's Rebbein versus Rashi himself. The only point of dispute is what the word atba'e means, and why is it forcing us to load the beams in this configuration. Quickly, I'll just share with you Rashi's Rebbein. Rashi's Rebbein say the reason why is because we know that there are rings on the poles. Now, why are there rings on the poles? So the reason is because once the poles are set up around the Mishkan, so they create a U-shape. And the U-shape now is going to be standing. Now, these beams are, as we already described, really long, 10 amas tall, and they're only one amma by 1.5 amas. So what gives it its stability? So what gives it its stability is that there are rods that are inserted. Now, there are going to be a total of 3 rods that are inserted. 2 rods are inserted externally along these rings that are fastened to the upper and lower portion of the beams. And then there's going to be a center rod. We're going to talk briefly today about that center rod. So these rings that are affixed to the beams, so Rashi's Rebbein say, so here's what happens. Each one of the beams has now 2 rings that are affixed to the outside of it. And so now when we're loading the beams onto the wagons, so the first column are going to have the rings facing outside. The second column that is flush against it are going to have the rings facing interior. And then the same thing is going to be true for the other two columns as well. Once you have that, so that's going to be the requirement in terms of making sure that there's this large area, a large airspace area in the middle, so that the rings are not really influencing or affecting one another. Fine. That is Rashi's Rebbein. Rashi doesn't like it for a couple reasons. Rashi offers his own explanation of the word atbe'e means. Rashi says atbe'e just simply means that there are clips that are clipping the columns together. Like I already noted, you have these very long beams and you're loading them on the narrowest side of the beam and their chance that they're going to fall down. And so therefore, they're clipped together. So that's the way Rashi describes the atbe'e. Anyway, and Rashi's Rebbein atbe'e is coming from the word taba'os, which is the rings. Either way, atbe'e is hechem aneklehu, agava da'agala, agala gufa mikorahava. So the Gemara says, okay, but the Gemara wants to challenge one more point, and that is the following. We're assuming that the wagons are a frame. The Gemara now wants to know, how do you know that the wagons are just simply frames? Aren't the wagons themselves, don't they have some sort of baseboard? The Gemara says, Amr Shmuel b'Yesedus. As we turn to the Amud Beis, Shmuel tells us that's not true. Meaning, there is no baseboard to the wagons. The wagons are an open frame. The construction of the wagons are really simple. It's just simply a frame, 4 sides to it, and the wagons are loaded the way we've been describing all morning. It just happens to be that for a moment, the Gemara just simply suggested that maybe there is some sort of baseboard to the wagons. Now, if that were the case, so then that would reintroduce the problem altogether. Because Rav taught us that if you're anywhere underneath the wagon, you're going to be in the Rishus Rabin. If you assume that there's some sort of baseboard to the wagon, so then you're under a roofed area. But the Gemara just simply says, yeah, but that's not the case. The case is that the wagon is just simply an open frame. Tanu Rabbanan. As we are now on Sari Chesam and Beis, the Gemara, as long as we're here describing the Mishkan, the Gemara will be spending the remainder of today's daf going over some more details of the Mishkan. So here, on the Amud Aleph, we were briefly introduced, but now the formal introduction to the Machlokas HaTanayim, exactly what the shape of each of the beams were. Were they tapered as they moved to the top, or were they a rectangular from bottom all the way to the top? So the first shita in this brisa, which I just read, is that they are tapered all the way to the, they are tapered to the top. Shenamar, the pasuk says, "You tamim al rosho." Now they are to be complete to the top, but the way that Rabbi Yehuda, this first shita is Rabbi Yehuda, the way Rabbi Yehuda understands it is that tamim over here means that they are tapered. The Gemara says, I'll give an example of how we see this in the Navi. In the beginning of Yeshua, as we're crossing the Yardane, Tamu Nichrisu. The Navi in Yeshua is describing the downstream of the river. It was Tamu. It stopped, meaning obviously with the Yardane having to stop so that the Jewish people would cross over the Yardane. So it stopped V'nichrisu, and it was cut off. But you see that the word Tamu is connected to the word Kares, which means to cut off. And that means to say that now we're going to take that and we're going to apply it to the Karashay HaMishkan, to the beams of the Mishkan. And so now they are cut as they're moving to the top, or as we described it, tapered. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemya Amar Kishim Shem Lamatan Ovyan Ama Kach Laman Ovyan Ama Shenemar Yachdav. Now Rabbi Nechemya says no, that the beams were rectangular from the bottom to the top because the Torah describes them as being Yachdav. They are a unit. They are unified. And that means to say that they are the same measurements from bottom all the way to the top. V'aksiv tamim. Now, obviously, each one of the tanaim have a word in the chumash that helps their position. What are they going to do with the other adjective? Now, the Gemara says v'aksiv tamim. What is Rabbi Nechemya going to do with the fact that the Torah describes them as being tamim? Ahu delesu shlemim v'lo lesu dinisra. So the Gemara says that no, for Rabbi Nechemya, the word tamim just simply means that to be, that they have to be solid wood, and it cannot be plywood. V'idach nami haksiv yachdav. What is Rabbi Yehuda going to do with the fact that it says the word yachdav? Hahu delolu shechafinu mehadade. Yachdav means as follows. Each one of the beams is tapered, but however, they have to all be tapered in the same direction, and then when set up, each one of them has to be aligned perfectly. The tapered edge has got to be in the form on the top, a single line. And that's what the Torah means when it says yachdav. Bishlam Laman Damar, the Gemara says, okay, now let's take the Karashia Mishkan and let's actually set it up, excuse me, and let's actually set it up and see if it configures correctly. Now, of course, it's going to configure correctly. It goes without saying. But the Gemara says, but based on our two viewpoints of how the Karashim are set up, let's take a look now and see if we can figure out the configuration. Now, the Mishkan itself is a very simple structure. It is simply a U-shape. The eastern side is totally open. Now, the Karashim are going to be creating the exterior wall. The interior dimensions of the Mishkan are going to be a total of 30 amas length, 10 amas in width. So that means to say that when the Karashim are set up, the 48 beams are set up in this U-shape, so that's going to create the interior area of 30 by 10. Of that 30, by the way, we all know this, so it's 30 subdivided to 20 and 10. 20 being the Kodesh, and the 10 being the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The interior 10 to the western side is going to be the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So now the Gemara says, let's now take the following into consideration. Bishlam laman dam kashem she melamata moviyama makach melamala ovian ama haindu dichsevu liyarkis yamishken yama tase shisha krashim ushne krashim tase lemikzos. Now we're looking at the western wall of the Mishkan. The western wall of the Mishkan, so we have six beams, and then we have the two corner beams. That makes now the six beams that make up for nine amas. Each one of the beams is put alongside its one and a half amma width, and so therefore six times 1.5. So that is going to get us to 9 amas. And then the two corner beams. Now, we're assuming the two corner beams are going to be flush, in alignment with the six. So that really gives us a total of 8. Fine. And the total of 8 now makes up for 12 amos. Now the Gemara says, now we're having, that is the western wall of the Mishkan. Now, the northern and southern walls, which are made up of the Krashim, so they're going to be put alongside, but alongside flush against the western wall. And the 1 amma side of the northern and southern walls are going to be, now go interior to the Mishkan. That's great, because the totality of the western wall was 12 ammas. You have an amma of the northern wall. You have an amma of the southern wall that takes up 2 ammas. And that gets us to the 10 amma interior airspace. And the Gemara makes exactly this point. Daski put the dahani mimale lele sumcha dahani. So the Gemara says, perfect configuration, works great. And lamanda memelamata novianama melamalan kalambahochin ad keetzba hai ova hai nafik. But the Gemara says, but if we're assuming the taper to the top, so what happens now in these corners? In these corners, it turns into a mess. Why? Because if they're tapered up to an etzba, so now what's happening is in that corner beam, in the southwest, in the northwest corner, so what you're having right now, if you're looking at it from the top, is that because everything now is tapered, so it's not visually pleasing. Because in the western wall, it's tapered, let's assume it's tapered to the eastern side, and the northern southern walls are tapered, the northern is tapered to the southern side, and the southern walls are tapered to the northern side, and when you get to the corners, it's just simply not visually pleasing. Because you have overlap now of the western wall that goes beyond the northern wall and goes beyond the southern wall. So the Gemara says, the Shafa Leiki Turin. So the Gemara says, okay, but that's not a big deal, because we are going to assume that the construction of those corner beams are going to be looking different. They're going to be tapered differently than the rest of the Krashim. Meaning they're going to be tapered in a manner where it's basically going to look like a mountaintop. Meaning they're going to be tapered along both its western side, and if it's on the north, it's in the northern corner, they're also going to be tapered on the northern side. And if they're in the southern corner, they're also going to be tapered on the southern side. So in other words, those corner beams are going to be tapered, so now it's visually pleasing, it's aesthetically nice, where now the tapered end is going to create a nice line and create that U-shape, not only on the bottom, on the top as well. Okay. So the Gemara says, so really the truth of the matter is that we're good either way. So the Gemara now is going to just take a moment talking about those rods that go through to give the exterior support. Now, as we already pointed out, there are 2 exterior rods that are put on each one of the sides of the Mishkan. And on top of that, there is also an interior rod. There's a hole in the center of each of the Krashim. And the rod goes all the way through. Now, if you're visualizing this well, so you realize that we have, first of all, an extraordinarily long rod, because the rod has got to go around the entire perimeter of the Mishkan. So that is 30 amas along the north, 12 amas along the west, and another 30 amas along the south. So the rod itself has to be very, very long. But on top of that, however, a very hard metal rod is going to be making 2 left-hand turns. Now, how does that work? The answer says the Gemara, Tana b'neis haya omeid. So the Braisa says that's just simply miraculous. Based on the simple laws of physics, there is no way that you're going to be able to insert a metal rod and then have the metal rod, as you're inserting it, make 2 left-hand turns. So the Gemara says that's miraculous. The Gemara says that, but just we recognizing the miracle of the rods going through the center of each of the Krashim, having to make 2 left-hand turns. Ve'esa Mishkan, we are on the middle of Sadiches Amud Beis, the last narrow line. Ve'esa Mishkan Taseh Eser Yerios. We're going to be spending the rest of today's daf talking about now the roof of the Mishkan. Now, I say roof, it really is a covering. A covering of the Mishkan, that is, we're going to be learning together right now, is there are 2 coverings. The first covering, interestingly enough, the Torah describes it with using the word Mishkan. So it's called Yirios HaMishkan, the coverings of the Mishkan. So the description of it is, it obviously is serving to cover the Mishkan, but we're also describing it as the Mishkan. And the second covering is, we could call it the Yirios HaIzim, also could describe it as the Ohel. Either way, there are 2 layers of covering. The first covering was made up of tchelas v'argaman. It was made up of wool and it was made up of linen. And the second covering was made up of goat hair. There's also another covering on top of that as well, which we discussed earlier. But right now, we're going to be focusing on these two coverings because the Torah gives us their dimensions. And now that we're familiar with the construction of the Mishkan, so now it's an opportune time to talk about the coverings and how exactly the coverings are going to be laying over the Mishkan. And the reason why it's relevant right now is because, obviously, whether or not the top of the Krushim are going to be tapered or they're not going to be tapered is obviously going to affect how the coverings are going to lay over the Mishkan. So it is an opportune time to discuss it, and the Gemara uses the opportunity. The Gemara starts off, the Esa Mishkan Taseh Esa Yiriyot. So we're talking now about the first covering, the Mishkan covering. So HaYiriyah HaShmona Ve'esrim Ba'ama. In terms of the construction, it's made up of five very long curtains that are very narrow, and they are stitched together. And another five very long curtains that are short on the wide side, and they are stitched together. The dimensions are going to be, each one of the Urios is made up of 28 amas, and each one of them in width is 4 amas. And the 4 amas are therefore are then stitched together. And so now what you have is 4 times 5, 20. And you have another 4 times 5, you have 20. So when stitched together now, you have 20 and you have 20. And what they're going to do then is that they're going to take those two mats and they're going to fasten them together. Loops are created at the end of each of these two sets. And then what's going to happen is that you're going to have the hooks that are going to connect these loops together, and the entirety of this is going to be laid over the Mishkan. The Gemara says, let's all now put this into play. I'm going to start reading from the Pasuk. V'esa Mishkan ta'aseh esa yiriyos. It's a total of 10 sheets. Orcha yiriyah acha shmonim v'esrei. The length is going to be 28. Ba'ama. Shadi orchai lepuchad de Mishkan kama havyan esrin v'tamye. So the Gemara says now that's 28 along the long side, which is placed along the width of the Mishkan. Dal eser li'igra. Now the interior airspace of the Mishkan is going to be 10. So knock off already 10. Pashaluhu tesla ha'gisa, tesla ha'gisa. Leaving 9 on one side going down the northern wall, 9 on the other side going down the southern wall. L'Rav Yehuda migle amada adanim. Now according to Rav Yehuda, now remember Shitas Rav Yehuda, the tops are tapered. So that means to say now that the 9 are going to go down immediately. Now, admittedly, just from a geometry standpoint, we are really going down a hypotenuse. We're not going straight down. So, admittedly, it's, you know, the numbers aren't working perfectly. But if we could just ignore that, because the Gemara is going to ignore it. So, for the moment, I'm going to ignore it as well. And we are just simply going to run down. So now we're running down 9 amas. We know that the total height of the krushim are 10 amas, so it's going to come down 9 amas. So what is being exposed? The bottom ama of each of the krushim. Now, it says on Chumash, I'm sure you remember this, each one of the krushim on the bottom had rings. And so what is now being exposed according to Rav Yehuda? The adanim, the rings on the bottom, which were an ama high. L'Rav Nechemya migla ama de krushim shad de puchayu la'orka de mishkan kama havyan arba'in. Dal klasen le'igra, pashluhu yud. Sorry, did I skip a little bit? Tesla hagisa. L'Rav Yehuda, migle amadad nim, l'Rav Nechemya, migle amad krushim. Okay. I did skip a little bit, but we just caught up. So, and according to Rav Nechemya, you have to remember that now you have the 10 amas of the interior space, but you also have on each side, the north and south, you have an additional ama. Because according to Rav Nechemya, the krushim were rectangular in shape. So that means there were an ama on the base. There were also a full ama on the top as well. So these curtains now have to go another ama to the north and another ama to the south, taking away an ama as it's headed down. So that means to say that according to Reb Nechemiah, when the first covering goes down, it's going to actually be exposing two amas on the bottom, which means not only the adanim on the bottom, but another ama is going to be exposed of the actual carriage itself. Okay. That's the 28 amas going down on the north and the southern side. Now, we're going to be talking along. Now we're going to go in the east-west trajectory. Now, as the first curtain is laid down, so it is going to be a total of 40 amas, right? 10 in total, each one made up of 4 amas in width, so it's going to be 40 amas. Now, daltasam le'igra, so now, as we're headed now to the west side, we're assuming that on the east side, it's flush against the opening. So now, as we're headed westbound, so we are going to take up 30 amas of the interior airspace. Pashlu yud le'Rav Yehuda, so that means to say now that according to Rav Yehuda, it starts making its descent immediately, and 10 amas are going down. Michsi amada adanim. That means it hits the floor. That means that on the western side, the adanim are going to be covered. L'Rav Nechemya migle amada adanim. But according to Rav Nechemya, because the western beams are going to be an ama on the top, so that now eats up an ama of the curtains. And so now when coming down, it's only going to be coming down 9 amas. And so that means on the western side, the adanim are going to be exposed. Okay, that is all covering number one. We have one more covering we have to cover. Thank you. V'asisa yiros izim la'ohel. So now we're going to be talking about the second covering, and this is going to be made up of the goat hair, and this is the ohel covering. Orecha yireachash loshim ba'ama. So over here, before we see it in the Gemara, let me just describe it outside. It's going to be similar, but the measurements are going to be slightly different. Instead of being 28 amas along the long side, it's going to be 30 amas along the long side. Constructed of not 5 and 5, but rather 5 and 6. Each one of them made up of 4 amas. So that means to say that the totality now is going to be it's 30 amas in length and 44 amas when all of them are pieced together. Again, it's going to be that same construct where it's 5 and 6. The 5 are stitched together, the 6 are stitched together. And then loops on the end of the 5 unit. Loops on the end of the 6 unit, and those loops are then going to be hooked together with the hooks. So it's the same basic design, but just the total linear measurement is going to be different. 30 along the wide side, and now when they're stitched together, 44 amas. And now the Gemara says, okay, so what we're going to do now is just figure out what happens when we lay it on top. Shadi arkai lepuchet de mishkan kam yahava talsin dal eser li'igra. And so we're going to do the same thing again. Now, 10 for the interior airspace. We're going now as it's laying along the north-south trajectory. Pashlu Eser, Lahaygisa, Eser, Lahaygisa. L'Rav Yehuda Michse Amad Adanim. Now, as it heads down, so according to Rav Yehuda, it goes down immediately. So that means to say that it's going to go 10 down on one side, 10 down on the other side. And L'Rav Nechemya, and according to Rav Yehuda, the Adanim on the northern and southern side are going to be covered by the Yirios Izim. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if you want to now just take a total picture, so the first covering exposes the Adanim, the second covering is going to cover the Adanim. L'Rav Nechemya Migle Ama de Adanim. Now, according to Rabbi Nechemya, the Ama of the Adanim are going to be exposed, meaning that according to Rabbi Nechemya, because you have the Tefach, the Ama of each of the Krushim that are going to be taking up another 2 Amas of the top, so that means to say that 9 are coming down of the second covering, and so therefore it'll cover all the way up to the Adanim, but the Adanim are going to be exposed on the northern and on the southern side. Tanya Nami Hachi, the Gemara now quotes the Brayz, Va'ama Mizeh Va'ama Mizeh Ba'odav L'chasos Amashal Adanim, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemya Omer L'chasos Amashal Krashim. And the Brayz over here just basically goes over this idea that based on how the Krashim are going to be configured, whether they're tapered or whether they're not tapered, is going to obviously affect how far down each of the curtains are going to go. Good. Shadje putai la'orcha de mishkan. And now we're going to go along the east-west trajectory. And again, we're assuming that the second covering is going to start. But here, however, we are not going to assume like we did regarding the first covering, that it's flush against the eastern opening. But rather, we are going to be assuming that the second covering is going to go start off a little bit over the eastern opening. Now, why we do that? Because of the pasuk. And the Gemara goes over this right now. Shadju putai la'archan de mishkan kamehavian. Mem va'arba. So the totality of the second covering is going to be 44 amas. Because remember, it's 11 pieces pieced together, each one of them being 4 amas wide. So that means to say a total of 44. Dal tasan le'igra. Pashaluhu arba srei. Now, the interior airspace is 30 amas in total. So 44 minus 30, that leaves us 14 to work with. Dal tarte le'kafala. Now, in terms of where it starts on the eastern side, actually, 2 amos over the eastern side. How do I know that? Dichsiv. The pasuk says, "V'chafalta es ha'yiriyah shishis El mul pnei ha'ol. Because the Torah says that we're going to be doubling over the first one over the front entrance of the Ohel Moed. So that means to say now that you take one, you double it over, so that's two. Two amas are going to go over the eastern entrance. So now of the 14 amas that are remaining, so now we knocked off two on the eastern side. Pashaluhu, Tartisrei. That leaves us now 12 on the western side. Bishlam of the Rabbi Yehuda. Now, how far down is it going to go on the western side? So again, it's all going to be affected in terms of the Krashim. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, I need to say, Chatzi Ayurot HaDefet Tisrach. So the Gemara now is going to be describing where I have 12 running down. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it runs down immediately. And so that means to say it's running down 12 amas. Now, there's no 12 amas to run down. It's only running down 10 amas. What happens to those last two amas? Basically, it turns into like a train of a wedding dress. So, but Elul Reb Nechemia, my Tisrach. Now, the Torah gives this description of the Odefet being Tisrach. It trails off. It's like a train of, it's like a wedding dress. But according to Reb Nechemia, it's not really true. Well, according to Reb Nechemia, it is, but it's only an amah. So the Gemara says, right, Tisrach mechaver saha. So the Gemara says, yeah, according to Reb Nechemia, even though it's an amah, but the word in the Torah Tisrach is still applicable because it is dragging, albeit it's only an amah, but it is dragging on the ground. Tan debe Reb Yishmael lama mishkan dome le'ishe shemaleches b'shuk b'shufleh ma'achin achareha. Now, I described it as a wedding dress. That was not my creativity. That is the Gemara. The Gemara says that, according to Rabbi Yishmael, what is the Mishkan similar to? It's similar to a woman who walks in the shuk, v'shufleha ma'achin achareha, and her long dress is trailing behind her. I guess my creativity has it that she's a kala. The Gemara over here does not describe it as a kala, but anyway, that is the picture and the visualization that the Gemara gives. Tanu Rabbanan. Charutzim hayu krashim v'chalulim hayu adanim. And we finish off today with two more points regarding the Mishkan, and that'll take us to the top of Sadi Tes. So let's go over both of these points. First of all, the Adanim. So the Gemara here gives a really short description, Charutzim Hayu Krashim, that when the Krashim got to the bottom, so what happened with the Krashim on the bottom is that they were shaved off a little bit so the Adanim, the rings, can fix onto the bottom. Again, if you have pictures over here in terms of seeing the rings fitting onto the bottom, in the Gemara itself, there is there is some sort of schematic in terms of seeing the bottom of the Krashim and seeing the Adanim fit on. The picture is, it's a schematic, so it's kind of hard to see. And on top of that, it kind of looks a little bit more, it doesn't look like a full ring that surrounds it. Okay, anyway, the Venirin Krasim Kalulos Kochavim Berakia. Now this is a separate point, Rashi says on the top of Tzadi Tesem and Aleph, and that is that now if you're imagining the hooks, because as we pointed out, both the first covering, the Mishkan covering, and the second covering, the Ohel covering, so they are constructed where you have, in the first covering, it's five and five that are stitched together, and then when they meet each other, they are looped at the end, and there are hooks that are attaching. When you're looking up and you're looking at these loops, they look like stars in the sky. And the same thing is true regarding the second covering, where they too are going to be five and six, and those two sections are going to be hooked together, right? Loops at the end and hooks that are connecting the two together. So when you're looking up, they look like stars in the sky. What exactly is the significance of that? It's a wonderful question. Leave off the daf of that question, and let's recap. It happens to be an extraordinarily simple daf to recap. The Gemara, we started off by talking about throwing, being Zorik Dal Amos Breshus Rabim, what happens when I intend to throw eight, instead I throw four, what happens when I intend to throw four, and instead I throw eight, what do we say under those circumstances where your actions do not meet your intentions? And the discussion in the Gemara in terms of whether or not a smaller act can be incorporated within a larger act, like writing the name Shame when your intention was to write the word Shimon. We discussed briefly this idea that if I throw four Amos, but it's aggregated, where I had two Amos in one Rishus HaRabim, plus another two Amos on the other side of the house in another Rishus HaRabim. So are they Mitzarev? The answer is yes, they are, and that obviously serves as a tremendous Chiddush. And the remainder of today's daf is based on the statement of Rav. Rav says that anytime you have a dome over Rishus HaRabim, it loses its status of Rishus HaRabim, and that Rishus HaRabim, by definition, has to be an open space. And there can be no roof over the top because that's the way it was in the Mishkan. And for the remainder of today's daf, we wanted to see whether or not that is a defensible position, because the wagons themselves are Rishus HaYachid. However, any airspace that finds itself within the wagons is considered a Rishus HaRabim. And the Gemara is bothered by the fact that if you are anywhere situated underneath, aren't there going to be beams over your head? And doesn't that serve as a roof? And what the Gemara did over the course of this morning is it configured the stackings of the beams on the wagons so that there is significant airspace, so you can be anywhere, not anywhere, but you can be in places in the wagon and still be directly looking up and seeing and seeing the sky. While we were on the subject, we got onto the topic of the Krushim, exactly the shapes of the Krushim. Now, the Torah gives very clear definition, and yet, certainly a point of interest, and yet the Tanaim debate exactly what the Krushim look like, but the question of, are the Krushim rectangular in shape, or are they tapered towards the top? And a major debate amongst the Tanaim, between Rabbi Yehuda and Nehemiah, and the Gemara spent the entirety of the Daf talking about the ramifications of this debate, in terms of loading them on the Mishkan, loading them on the Agalos, and then in terms of how they are going to present themselves as you're setting them up in a U-shape, and in terms of how the Urios are going to be situated and laying on top of the Krushim. Okay, and we just went through all the ramifications of that debate.